Rabbi Jim Egolf. I want to thank you so much for listening to this show on your iPod or your Zoom or your computer or however you log in to listen to me. This week we look at the Torah portion Ekev and we think about what God actually demands from us. Oftentimes when we get into religious discussions, we end up talking about not necessarily what God wants from us, but the trappings of religion. But what happens when the Torah actually comes and says, this is what I want, and by the way, you also don't tend to always do it so well? What is it that gets in the way? Well, the answer may be closer than we think. I thank you so much for joining me. The music that you hear on this podcast can be bought at magnatune.com, and it can either be downloaded or it can be purchased on a CD. I thank you so much for joining me. Shalom. Various films that have theological components. And, you know, recently there's been, like, Evan Almighty and Bruce Almighty, which were, they were cute, and they were funny, but they can't really work, make them to the first and second places, in my opinion. My second place, my first favorite movie is actually The Life of Brian, which is, bar none, the funniest movie, theological movie that I've seen made. But there was one made about 10 years ago, starring Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, where they play these angels in this movie called Dogma. And they're sitting in an airport, and they're having this conversation. And Matt Damon is trying to convince a nun to leave the nunnery. But as they go on with the conversation back and forth, they get into this almost theological discussion bordering on the legal in terms of what can actually happen, how these two, they're cast out angels from heaven, how they're actually going to get back into heaven. So they actually had figured out a way to game the system to actually get back into heaven at some point. But, you know, in this entire conversation, they never actually came out and said what God actually wanted them to do, or they never were telling the humans what God wanted them to do. Well, our Torah portion this evening does talk a little bit about what God actually wants us to do. And it says, "And now, Israel, what does Adonai, your God, require of you?" It's going to be kind of really cut and dry here at this point. "Only to fear or have awe for Adonai, your God, to walk in God's ways, to love God, to serve God with all your heart and with all your soul, to keep your good commandments of God and God's statutes, which I command you this day. Behold, unto God belongs the heaven and the earth and the heaven of the heavens and all that is therein. Only Adonai had delight in your fathers to love them, and he chose their seed after them above all the peoples, as it is this day. Circumcise, therefore, the foreskin of your heart, and be no more stiff-necked." We'll get back to that stiff-necked thing in a second. "For Adonai, your God, is the God of gods." I'm reading from a gender non-sensitive translation. "The Lord of lords, the great God, and mighty and awesome, who regardeth no persons and taketh no reward." So, I was reading through this, I'm thinking to myself, okay, it's kind of simple in terms of what God wants from us. Do what God told us to do, walk in God's ways, etc., etc., etc. But this whole beginning, "and now," is almost a repeat of what God actually said the first time, because God kind of had said these things to us at some other point, and then we had a couple of issues back in Leviticus with, you know, building certain things we weren't supposed to build, and then we're finally getting to this point that we're about to go into the land, and let's, you know, make sure that everybody's on board with, you know, this is kind of the mission statement of the Israelites as they go into the land. But, you know, God says, you know, but be no more stiff-necked. And I began to think about this thing in terms of being stiff-necked because, you know, what is it that gets us to be stiff-necked? You know, other than a bad pillow, what is it that makes us stiff-necked? Because we sit and when I was growing up, the term in the South was people were hard-headed. And that was also, that was the Southernism for being stiff-necked. Every culture has this notion. I think the question in there is, how often do we get in the way of actually doing the things and chasing the things and pursuing the things that God might want us to do, which are actually kind of simple, but at the same time, we tend to get in the way. And I was going through a series of Divrei Torah, and I found this wonderful, great passage that'll kind of begin to tell us where the problem might be. Might be closer than you think. This passage is by Rabbi David Wolpe, and it's entitled Seeing Ourselves. He writes, according to Jewish law, one is not permitted to pray in front of a mirror. As a result, interiors of synagogues have many kinds of decorations, but no mirrors. Okay, I've been in one synagogue that has a mirror in it, but it's my in-law's synagogue. The first reason is that one should not pray before a mirror is the chance of mistaking the object of reverence. It should be God, not oneself. But there is another, subtler reason. Prayer goes ill with self-consciousness. As long as we're concerned about how we look, it becomes very difficult to be in a spiritual moment. Similarly, in a house of mourning, we cover the mirrors because even a mourner can be easily distracted by seeing his or her image in the mirror and look to straighten a tie or adjust a hem or simply pull oneself together. Self-consciousness destroys the self-forgetting required for immersion in a spiritual moment. We'll get back to the immersion in spiritual moments in a moment. When I thought about our Torah portion and these words from Rabbi Wolpe, I really began to wonder how spiritual we have been in the past couple decades in one area and how spiritual we might actually begin to become at this point. You know, this past week, Senators Obama and McCain were interviewed by Reverend Rick Warren of Saddleback Church in California. I heard about this, it was going to come up, and I kind of thought to myself, now how inwardly reflective are you going to be with 50 to 100 million people watching you ad nauseum on YouTube? But I think they managed. And at the same time, as I listened to parts of this clip, I began to think to myself, you know what? These questions and the conversations that were had actually probably could not take place on CNN or anywhere else. They actually had to take place in a sense of safety that a religious context would add. You know, to sit and to have a conversation with a minister openly, but at the same time with a minister, he asked them what their greatest moral failing was. And then, what is the greatest moral failing of our country? I was very struck by, first, Senator McCain got very quiet, and then he got up and he said, my greatest failing was the failure of my first marriage. I mean, that was a really hard thing to get up and to say in front of however many millions of people. But clearly something that had been on his mind and had been bothering him. And to be able to actually express that in terms of his own moral feeling, because he felt that it was not appropriate for that to have happened, or he's still feeling regrets about it. You know, just think for a moment. I don't want you to think too hard. But the divorced couples that you know, how many partners from those divorces are going to go on a national television program and kind of put their hand in the air and say, yeah, I was partially to blame. In fact, I was a lot to blame with regards to what happened. I mean, just think about how many people have the ability to do that. A reflective moment, if you will. And then for our country, he said, not telling Americans to serve a higher purpose after 9/11 than going shopping and going on vacations. Not telling people that they needed to sacrifice for their country and only pursuing our own narrow national interests. And I thought that was great because the moment, the religious moment provided the mirror of the soul that was needed in terms of actually, you know, saying, where am I at? What can I understand? What do I need to kind of reflect upon as somebody who's trying to become the President of the United States? Before I get to Senator Obama's response, I'll get to his response, but I was kind of struck by something that kind of tied into a rabbi's teaching. He's not running for that office. Senator Obama said that a range of failures at different points in his life have all centered around his own selfishness. So he talked about using drugs, he talked about drinking alcohol and abusing alcohol. He talked about a lot of different things that were almost, if you will, transgressions according to a stage in life. And I heard this and I thought of Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz, who in this great video called The Talmud and the Scholar, he said, you know, we tend to have different transgressions at different ages in our lives. When we're younger, we tend to be driven by lust. When we're older, we tend to be driven by, he suggests that a man is driven by money. And he said, and you know what, those are urges and things that happen at different times in people's lives. He said, it gets really bad when they reverse. So when the old guy chases the young girl, the young guy is only worried about the money, then that becomes a problem. And that's where they get kind of really take somebody out of kilter. But he said, you know, there are certain times in your life when there are certain things you're more drawn to in terms of transgressions. So I just wanted to, I heard Senator Obama's response, and I kind of, that teaching kind of popped into my mind. But then for our country, Senator Obama suggested that it's that we've transgressed by not offering a way to create and to make sure that people can actually climb into the middle class. And making sure that we're not protecting the disadvantaged, we're not helping them, giving them a sense of hope to actually move from one place to another. You know, you just think about what's going on in the mortgage industry, and granted it hasn't, I haven't heard a lot of people being touched about it, but the first people to be in trouble were the people who had these adjustable rate mortgages that they got into just to be able to get into a home. And you know, there is that definition of, you know, what is a recession versus a depression? A recession is when your neighbor loses his job, but a depression is when you lose your job, exactly. Without this stage, this conversation, there would not have been the ability, I don't think, for either one of these politicians to actually talk openly about things that they've messed up in terms of who they are as human beings. And so maybe we're actually beginning to move to a different conversation and a different use of religion in our country when it comes to our political conversation, other than just simply saying, you know, I'm a good fill-in-the-blank, and therefore I'm electable, as opposed to actually saying, I'm a good fill-in-the-blank, and that also means that I'm also culpable for a lot of the things that actually go with my religious teachings and traditions. So, going back to our Torah portion for a second, and then we'll end up with the personal piece. Our Torah portion continues after where I stopped and does talk about what we actually have to do. It actually addresses the second question in terms of what is it that a society is supposed to do? And it's almost like, you know, I think Rick Warren almost pulled his question from this passage, because it continues on. It says, God executes justice for the fatherless and widow, loves the stranger in giving the stranger food and clothing. Therefore, because of this, you should love the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Heard that before? Yes. You shall fear Adonai your God. You shall serve Adonai your God. And to God you shall cleave, for God, and in God's name shall you swear. For God is your glory, and God and Adonai is your God, that has done for you all these tremendous and wonderful things, which your eyes have seen. This is the generation that's about to go in. Some of them actually saw these things. Your ancestors went down to Egypt with 70 people, and now Adonai your God brings you out as the stars and the multitude of stars in the heaven. So, in terms of answering that second question, the Torah portion gets there, because it really says, if these people are being taken care of, society's not doing its job. But going back, I want to go back to that immersion in a spiritual moment. And I want to switch to a different tradition, to the Sufi tradition, because I found a wonderful story there that talks about how we tend to get in our way, how our reflections tend to get in our way, and how actually getting immersed in things actually helps us to actually move forward. And there is a character in Sufi tradition called Shibli. And the story goes as follows. Someone asked Shibli, when he became enlightened, who have been your teachers? He counted many. He also counted a dog. Because the dog was thirsty and tried to jump into the river and drink to his heart's content. But as he looked in the river, he would see another dog, and he was afraid. But the thirst was too much. Finally, he overcame his fear and jumped into the river, and the reflection disappeared. There was no other dog. It was just a reflection. The river was just mirroring himself. And Shibli said, that dog was my first teacher, because there is nobody else. Only I am. And everybody else is just mirroring my face. And I am unnecessarily afraid. Once I understood the art of jumping into the river, I jumped and reflections disappeared. And only the river was there, the river of God, the river of existence. And since then, I have never been thirsty. I live in the water. Or as Rabbi Wolpe said, to become immersed. One of the struggles that we get into in our lives is this whole issue of what is the presentation of how we look and who are we truly? And to go back to Shibli's teaching and Rabbi Wolpe's teaching, at some level, the only way to actually be something, the only way to actually own something, is not by only image of it, but actually jumping into the water, whether it's by admitting our faults, or whether it's by saying, I want to know this, or I want to learn that, and actually going and just doing it.